coming round. We're here for the show. I'll be happy
tomorrow. Hi, this is Christy and Katrina at the DK805 podcast. Today we're going to discuss, this is a tough one for me. We're going to talk about how I found my son, what that involved, how the system let me down, and how I was failed and my son was failed. It's a tough one for me. This is a tough one for me to talk about, but I want my story to be told.
It needs to be told. We need to have this conversation.
It does need to be told. I was Devon went to rehab multiple times, and my son wanted to he wanted to be clean. He did want to be clean. One of the things that I've learned through Devon's illness is that relapse is part of recovery. The average time people are in rehab is at least up to 9 times. So 1 year, Devon went, I can feel my heart starting to race. 1 year, Devon went to rehab 3 times in 1 year. My insurance company at that point said they denied him to go anymore that year. So we struggled. And I spoke about how we were trying to get him counseling. This is prior to his death, but how we were trying to get him counseling. And the police would then come, knock on the door, give him a probation violation. He'd end up in handcuffs. He'd be walked out of my house.
Was that probation court? Is that what you're talking about? Did he have...
He had
to be mandatory tested?
He had to be mandatory tested, and then he would test dirty, but the rehabs wouldn't take him because the insurance company said he had gone too many times, and... So
you're sort of like playing this sort of like role of like, you know, what, you know, who's going to help me here and who's going to help me there.
Nobody was helping me.
And then you have the backup fear and anxiety of that being testing dirty when, of course, if they're not in recovery, they're going to test dirty.
And this was in the, you know, early stages because my sources were in 2013 was the start of recognizing that addiction was a brain illness. And so Devon was in the early stages of his illness, early stages of the beginning to recognize it as a brain illness. Mm-hmm. So Devon had gone to rehab 1 year. I don't remember the year. If I had all the notes in front of me,
how
I might.
How could you, right?
Mm-hmm. But he had gone 3 times, and then he wanted to go another time in the courts. I mean, not the courts. The insurance company told him, no, he'd gone too many times. Yeah. So we're scrambling to find counseling for him.
Right.
And he wasn't even using
a lack of resources there. Then.
A lack of resources, and he tested
when they're ready.
He tested positive for weed when he was handcuffed.
And weed stays in your system for 30 days, and it's impossible to not be positive.
And he was young.
Oh, yeah,
he was young. He was probably 19, 20 at this age.
It's almost like system set up to failure for you, because if you check into a rehab, like with Dylan, when he would go into, go from a rehab to go into sober living. I'll just start with that, where it would be that point. Sober living, he continued to smoke marijuana. Weed was in the system, and he had he had a method of doing that, where it was always, it was like a system set up to fail, because it would be like they had so many times that you could come in and test and have it be where you could still stay, but they would eventually just have him discharge him, have him leave, because he was still testing positive. I'll say positive.
But through those failures in Devon's early addictions, my son's illness continued to grow and grow.
Yeah.
So let me fast forward to the night I was screaming for help.
Right.
With Devon. We paid for out-of-pocket insurance because I felt there were better options and more support available if we paid for out-of-pocket. So I'm paying over $1,500 a month for out-of-pocket insurance. His sober livings were up to $2,500 a month. I'm working to keep my child alive, because addictions are expensive, mm-hmm. illnesses are expensive. He was going to a pro-profit rehabs, which have absolutely increased. I have another statistic here. They became a $35 billion a year pro-profit treatment centers that started popping up everywhere. Mm-hmm. And this was in my early stages. Mm-hmm. Under the impression that pro-profit meant better treatment. That's not always the case.
No.
Devin was body brokered. He was in body brokering. In my child's case, Matt, he was in rehab. People inside the rehabs, they would then go to sober living houses. The people in the sober living houses were in connection with, they call it embed, with the treatment centers. They were giving kids money to relapse so they could bring them back into treatment.
Right.
And so Devin became sicker and sicker. And so the night Devin passed away, I called one of the treatment centers he had gone to, where my insurance paid thousands and thousands of dollars for a 30-day stay. Devin wanted to go back there because he felt it was the place that could help him the best.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I didn't know my insurance had dropped coverage.
Right.
I'm pleading with the insurance company. I mean, with the treatment program, just take him from detox. I'll figure it out. I called the insurance company. I had the insurance company on the phone with the rehab saying, will you take a single case agreement? Treatment center kept saying, no, they won't. Right. They won't. They're giving me referrals to other treatment centers that Devin's insurance would cover. Devin was currency. He was currency. And they were treating him as currency. The next morning, Devin was set up to go to rehab. Unfortunately, he didn't survive that night. And I'm getting text messages, and all I could text back that next morning was, Devin's dead. Devin's dead. Devin's dead. And I was screaming it. Somebody called me from the treatment program. I'm like, Devin's dead. I called the treatment program back screaming, you should think about taking single case agreements. I have text messages from therapists telling me we were paying $275 out of pocket for a 45-minute session.
The system is...
And the psychologist told me, Devin's not worth his time. He's not worth my time. Now, I still have those text messages. And the system is such a failure, and I get so, so angry at how many people die because they can't afford treatment. And in
the promises they make, too. I remember for me with and he did have many treatment tries, and really too many to go back even to count, but in the early stages, they were, the better of the treatments with, the insurance pain, but the promises that were given on the other, as a mother calling or a father calling, you, when they are on the other end of the line, it's everything that they are saying is it's just belief to you. So we are going to handhold him, take him, your child, to IOP, which is the therapy that's, there offered at a rehab, or that we're going to be working out together. We're going to do it all. Just, they say in the promises that they make, I think that needs to change. Again, the work that, so many people in recovery have, obviously there's so many beautiful, wonderful people with a heart to want to heal. I'm just angry. I'm angry because I look back and when I'm hearing, this has brought this all back up for me because I had kind of placed it away in a place of, it's the fentanyl poisoning. That poison needs to be eradicated for the future generations. And that's my prayer, just like with anything that would be something you could prevent. But with looking back, it's like, I never even thought that would have been in my son's passing, but it is. And that's this is the fight for this fentanyl crisis for so many, because there's so many young people that are just taking that one time. They don't have this journey of addiction going through rehabs. But when it was the promises told on the other end of the line, and having it be where I'd call and I would be following up, and when are we starting with the family treatment? You know, they didn't even know where Dylan was or what he was doing for that day or where he was. There was no care that they were talking about. There was no, many times, it was baffling to me. It was, I had a very loud voice, and I was, you know.
Devin had good experiences at rehab too.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that all the rehabs didn't work, but the treatment and the duration that the insurance allows sets
right
people up for failure. And I think the system itself sets people up for failure. One of the constant things that we dealt with over and over, Devin was always, he did the best at rehab, and I would get, every time before he was released, I get so anxious and so scared because the world wasn't safe for him, and I felt like he was at his best, and he was always so hopeful, and I was always so hopeful. Right. And I know I mentioned when I'd go see him after his detoxing, I'd go in and I'd look at him and I'm like, welcome home. I could see his eyes. Mm-hmm. Oh, there goes the emotions, because his eyes were always so clear and so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of the pictures I have with Devin, I love every photo I have with him. But some of them I know. I can look at his eyes, and I know in those photos. But he was doing the best he could.
Yeah. And that's what we're doing. We're doing the best we can. And as a parent, we do the best we can in the moments that we're walking them. And, you know, the first year for me for grief was looking at all I had felt I'd done wrong. And I was you know, you just go back at the whys and the what ifs. And then, so for me, part of healing, which was what I just felt Dylan kept saying to me, just, Mom, you know, do the work for, you know, like, as I would say to him, do the work. That was our language to each other. And so I found programs that would help me, outlets that would help me, work on those things that I, you know, again, it is, you know, I didn't, you know, you didn't cause it. Can't change it, can't cure it. This is a personal journey for our children. As much as we think we can save or keep them from getting in the car with, you know, and the accident happens, we cannot. We are not God.
Well, and when a family member has an illness or an addiction, the family unit's sick. It wasn't just Devin that was sick.
Everyone feels it, yeah.
And then I would hear that people would often say that my addiction was Devin. Well, how's he not supposed to be my addiction?
Yeah.
Am I just supposed to let him struggle through life?
They say did you're that. You get addicted to your, yeah, the saving and the, there is that whole thing that I've definitely been told that too, but there is that whole thing of that, it's not addicted to, but that feeling of that when it's like, okay, you're saving as fast as you can. Yeah. It's like that. It becomes your life. And then when that, then you have to work on like, okay, well, who am I now? Where am I, you know, going to be?
And I don't know who I am now. Yeah. I'm a different parent.
Yeah.
Than I was prior. I feel like so much of my parenting was hijacked by lack of support, that I could never get ahead of his addiction. He could never get ahead of his addiction. There wasn't the support. There wasn't the money. There wasn't the community. I tried absolutely everything. Yeah. I knocked on his friends' doors when he was a minor. I would beg them not to party with Devin. I would tell my family, Devin's really sick. I need support. It was hard.
Christy,
it was so hard.
That's what I'm saying. I see, you know, friends that have had similar walks, but their you know, their sons, their daughters recovered in programs that are faith-based, that are not, that don't cost a penny, that are, you know, that there's, it's when it's, I have had to really come to just understand that it will only work when the person is going to do that work. And it doesn't matter where they go to get that, because that's their journey. That's what I've had to come to accept to bring my heart peace.
Well, and I think that some people,
it's that surrender.
Well, Devin surrendered.
Yeah.
But the illness didn't. So Devin was surrendering. And he would tell me, I'm going to keep disappointing you. I don't know how to stay clean. I don't want this.
Right.
I don't want this, Mom. You don't understand. And he would, you know, he would, through tears.
Yeah. Yeah.
Through begging, you know, he wanted to be clean, but it's the another illness didn't want him to be clean. There's a saying that the illness, it grows stronger in the back of your brain, mm-hmm. like it's doing push-ups.
Well, it's layered on. So then you have the individual, our loved ones, they have the shame that feels like they let us down somehow. And then they layer that with what they know how to soothe themselves with. That's the learning of what does soothe that initial pain that caused them. And whether it's like the trauma hits in the early on stages, or the loneliness. For Dylan, it was a big part of like COVID, the shutdown, the social media stuff at that point, just being like triggered for the things that were just causing his mind more anxiety. Layer that, and then put that on, self-soothing was what he was. It was more like, I look at it like, and it was there's so much of that was out of our control, that we couldn't take that time frame away from their walk. But yeah, Dylan was turned away because he didn't believe in vaccinations. He was turned away. He was asked to leave if he didn't, I'd talk to him at one point in one couple days of being in the treatment. And then it would be within, a couple days later, he's gone because he asked why? Because he was told he needed to get vaccinated or he couldn't stay. And it was a county program. And those are things that I have had to really, in my early stages, was there was so much anger, and I've had to let go of that because you can't, that's toxic. And I can't live like that with that much pain of feeling like, the things that could have been.
I think anger's motivating, though. And I think that we need to be angry at the system. And I want my voice to be angry, and I want to stand up, and I want to scream.
Well, I want to advocate for change, for sure. That is,
But it's righteous anger.
Yeah.
As long as it's righteous anger and not toxic anger.
Right.
I've been quiet. I've been quiet far too long, and now my kid's dead.
Yeah.
And that, when we talk about anger, I can compartmentalize and I can push everything down and talk about kindness and forgiveness, but I'm angry that people are profiting off addicts. It's the sick, the elderly, and the undereducated, and they've always been taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. And I was undereducated because I didn't understand the drug world, and I was quite naive in trusting the system to save my child. I'm going to a medical care profession.
Yes.
They know more than me. They went to school. Yeah. No, they just wanted my money.
No, when you call, I don't know if I know that we've talked about with the crisis team. For me, that's what you have in the local areas to call. You call the crisis team, and there is, it's like one hand is like, there needs to be so much work done there where they actually are working together and they know what they're doing. Because it was like one hand, I'd call, and then one hand would like be like in the moment, it was, they're coming. There, it was always that feeling like I'm getting the help, and then they just let you know, right? Then we can't do that. We can't help them. Or, there's this like, what are you here for to do?
Well, there's a false narrative being pushed that help's available. Well, tell me where it is. Tell me where it is, because trust me, I've overturned every single stone. And so the parents that have the problematic children,
right?
I don't know any parent with a problematic, I call them a problematic child, the strong-willed child, the child with an illness. I get mad if somebody calls my child a problem, but he required intervention.
Yeah.
I've tried everything. And then I have people, and I would never, I can say this, I think I can speak for both of us. I would never want anybody to walk in my shoes.
No.
I would never want another mother or father.
Well, we know they will. We know they will.
But we have to make changes or bring awareness so they're not, so they're not putting their kids in what I thought was a trusted program with my son coming home telling me, oh, I got $5,000 because they wanted me to relapse. Mm-hmm. They just wanted me to relapse because they want the insurance money, Mom. So then we'd go look for another one.
Right.
I wish he were here, but so he could say it through himself. You could hear it through his voice.
I think they
are,
though. That's what this is about. They are. And it's through their, like we've talked about it, them being the soldiers, like sort of in the front line when there's, with anything with adversity, that when it comes to be like a polarizing event, and they're sort of they are the image of, you know, ultimately what the fentanyl poison is about. With the, you know, we can share their stories and we can share ours. We can share, again, there will be no right, you know, that's why we're not gonna, you know, in this name names to give places to go, because it isn't, that's not part of our journey, because if one works for some person might not work for another person. So, but what we can do is, like, what I didn't know would be like, do like with anything, with if you're going to a doctor, you would want to try three or four, check two or three at least before you go to just one and listen to the other end. Because I was desperate and was getting, like I said, I felt like they were false promises to me, but I was also hearing it as a promise because I so wanted that to be. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, so there's like doing your, you know, the investigative work that we can do is just being vetting as best you can, but also going and seeing the places and talking to the people that you can talk to.
Absolutely, absolutely. But one of the things that I learned with Devin and his illness as well is that sometimes in their illness, they want to go to the rehabs that are body brokering them, mm-hmm. because they can't find jobs. They can't. So you're giving people who are sick or in their illness money. That sounds attractive.
Well,
that
that's what happened during COVID. You're getting checks and you're getting money, and there is an isolation and you can't work, and they're, what that caused, that'll be unraveling for a long time to come. And I'm hoping that we can, you know, just definitely see some changes coming quicker to where people can acknowledge that and set up mental health in a better way, that it's more accessible. And because that is what we will be seeing. The ripple effect of these things are.
And I want my anger to be for change, positive change. If I have to feel the pain, I need the pain to have purpose.
Yeah.
I want the pain to have purpose, and I
there's healing in these tears. It's like, it's like you can't just cap it down to keep it from, because that's the whole point. There's that, you know, through the tears is healing, you know, it's.
And I know my child's story. You've shared your child's story, but sitting in the rooms of those fighting for their own recovery, hearing their stories is just as painful.
It is.
And sometimes I know I would sometimes want to shake my child, mm-hmm. and just, mm-hmm. and sometimes I've been that, mm-hmm. parent where I've been screaming and yelling, mm-hmm. and I've been desperate, and mm-hmm. I've been the parent that's turned and walked away. I've, mm-hmm. done everything that I would tell every parent not to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the answer, but I know silence isn't.
No.
Isn't it?
No. And we have
I
to,
know being silent, isn't
right.
it? And I know that the more the unlawful rehabs are exposed, the more lawful rehabs
right.
will be able to offer the
to
treatment.
Know they're accountable, right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's so many. There's so many, and California.
We have such an opportunity to have so many, and again, every county could have, every town could have, with just, you know, again, a place to that you know you could go to, which we don't have. It would be like, unless you have. So, again, turning to a place that is just, we need to start thinking that way, where we have, you know, the mental health available for even the, when they're not living at home, they can go. So this is like us talking about us rescuing our kids. They were adults. My son was an adult. He was 28 years old, and I was doing the work for him that was, he wasn't doing the work.
Well, sometimes that's because of developmental arrest.
Yes.
Are there not even...
And that's how we knew the markers weren't being hit and the things that, you know, ability to stay in that pace that they were...
Correct. Right. And the brain stops developing what at the age you start using the drugs.
Right.
So if there's developmental arrest, yes, they were 28 years old when they passed away, but their brains were still functioning as a 15-year-old. Because they were still...
On many levels, yeah. I wouldn't say all for Dylan. But yeah, I mean, most because he had clarity. He had... and then there was time. So it was... There was a lot of willfulness. There was a lot of... as I did, this could never happen to me. And so I think that's why for me the fentanyl crisis became. I mean, I was just full blown into it when I found out it was fentanyl. Like, how can this be pouring over, you know, open borders? How can so that became? And then I had to turn that whole anger down because that wasn't a helpful tool. That was just that was keeping me sort of stuck in that space of that there I could still do something, that I was still trying to save. I was still going on addicts mom sites and praying with moms, realizing that internally, as I look at it now, I was still trying to save my son.
For me now, my current day is I can't save my son, but what I can do is save the next generation. I can be a voice for change. My son is home and he's safe, not the way I wanted him, home and safe, but he's home and safe currently. But there's a whole generation that is still being affected. And the collateral damage it does to a family is astronomical. We could never build the happy memories because all the happy memories, we were giving cash to the rehabs. Mm. And so one of the things that we know helps with people in recovery is going on family vacations, it's community, it's connection, it's building new memories. And if we only feed the brain full of the illness grows. Mm-hmm. But as the illness grows, you have to spend the money to keep the illness at bay. So there became a lot of resentment and a lot of overworking.
Yeah.
And Devin could feel all of that, and he felt guilty over that as well. And he would work when he tried, but it's just the system is so, so broken. And I need, for those people who have experienced anything close to what we've done or what's worked for them, please, please reach out to us at the DK805 podcast, because you're hearing my story and you're hearing Katrina's story, but you all have stories, and we want you on our program as well. We're looking for speakers to come on and share your stories of what's worked. This isn't just about Christy and Katrina. This is the DK805 podcast, and that 805 includes the entire community. We're here for everybody.
That's right. And reaching out, that is the first step, just reaching out and not being afraid to share your story and feeling there's, you know, there is so much stigma around what we are discussing, but we want to be the voice that can change that, change the stigma. And, you know, there's a podcast that I follow, actually. It's called Fuck the Stigma. And, I just want to say that there are so many really beautiful, powerful people in the recovery world right now really speaking out. It's like, you know, loud and, you know, just, you know, we have to. We just
Absolutely.
Have to. Our voices have to be loud. We have to keep fighting for those that, you know, need our voice.
And we need that within our community.
That's
805.
Right.
Okay. Reach out to us again at dk805podcast.com. Send us your email. Send us your comments. We're here for you. And my anger is purpose for pain.
I was just going to say, you know, that's what we're doing here, turning our pain into purpose.
We're coming round, we're here for the show. I'll be happy.